I'm Mike Lubig of the New York Daily News and SportsOnEarth.com.
I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
And I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press, and this is the Sports Reporters Podcast for Monday morning. We have a Super Bowl set. In the end, it was the number one seeds, as unlikely as all that seemed, with all the questions for Tom Brady's hand, and could the Jacksonville Jaguars be the team to upset, all the questions about Nick Foles in Philadelphia, how could they possibly get there, and yet number one versus number one in Minnesota in 2 weeks' time. And let's begin with the New England game, because we got an entertaining game, we got it close. To my way of thinking, the only problem with this game for the Jacksonville Jaguars is in the fourth quarter, they basically remembered that they were the Jacksonville Jaguars and they were up against the New England Patriots. And I've seen this happen in sports a gazillion times. You're not ready for the moment. The other team is. And they move in and take it. And Tom Brady led that way. What do you guys think?
Well, to me, as great as Brady was in the fourth quarter, which is as great as Brady was in the fourth quarter against the Seahawks in a Super Bowl, and as great as Brady was in the fourth quarter in overtime against the Falcons, the Jaguars, to me, especially in the second half, looked like they actually thought they could go into Foxborough and go into some kind of four corners offense and run out the clock on their way to Minneapolis. And to me, they started losing this game at the end of the first half. Yep. When they had a third down in New England territory, came out of a timeout, and Bortles gets a delay of game before a play that actually would have gained them 12 yards. Before you know it, he gets sacked. They punt it back. There's a couple of penalties. And Bobby, tell me you didn't think at 14-10 that an unbelievable opportunity had been lost for the Jaguars to either go ahead 17-3 or even 21-3. Because all that stuff happened with about 2 minutes and 20 seconds left in the half.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. There's just no forgiving anyone responsible for coming out of a timeout and then losing that gain, that big 12-yard gain, right, because of a delay of game. It's just these are the kind of things that the other teams seem to do, the Patriots don't do. The Patriots had one flag the whole day.
Yeah.
The penalties were, you know, they led the league in first downs via penalty this year themselves, and they don't make these mistakes in these moments. No question. But I thought another omen, or no, maybe whatever, another precursor was you telling me that it was wise to take two knees with 55 seconds
right,
to go.
Yep, right,
you
right.
You wouldn't try you to go get, at least get three
same
more on the board.
In the same sequence, yep. Bobby, 100%.
So that's a mentality. You don't deserve to win if you don't want to play aggressively enough. That was amazing to me. I mean, because I'm so used to looking at the Patriots do stuff in the last 2 minutes.
55 seconds, two timeouts, and you take knees right after the team that you're playing does proves to you that they do exactly not that. 14 out of 18 times they have scored in the last 2 minutes of the first half. That is attention to detail football that. You know, the Patriots have always been head and shoulders above everybody else. You know, last 2 minutes of the first half, a lot of times teams get wonky. You know, some of them kind of check out. They're already thinking about going to halftime we got the timeouts left, but we don't have to use them, whatever. It's not as if some teams don't approach the last 2 minutes of the first half the same way that teams approach the last 2 minutes of the game. I don't understand it. You know, every minute is precious. Every second and every possession is precious. If there were 55 seconds left in the game, would you take two knees? I mean, well, you know, you don't say, oh, we're satisfied with the lead that we have. And then, Mike, to your point, the four corners offense, what I thought happened with Jacksonville is I think they came out with a great offensive plan. It's just they only had enough of an offensive plan to last for a half. You know, you heard Tony Romo went on ad nauseum about it. He wasn't wrong. He just says the same thing over and over a lot. But, you know, play action was freezing New England a lot, and then they'd have a short dump pass, and then they'd have a drop back, and then they'd have a run, and they'd mix it up. And all of a sudden, they came out in the second half, and they were run on first down and have two passes on second and third, and that's way too predictable for New England.
specifically the thing that was and this was predicted by some people that I was listening to before the game, and that was that the one area of an area, not one, they have more than one, but an area of vulnerability this season for the Patriots were backs catching the ball out of the backfield. And that's what was their best bread and butter in the first half, yep. Minnesota. It wasn't wideouts or tight ends, or it was backs. And you know, Fournette was getting space, and that you know, why not keep doing it, you know? So.
And Bob, Mitch, you watch them in the second half, and as good as Fournette is, it's like they didn't know when to use him or how to use him. And how many, you're right, Mitch, how many times did we look at second and eight in the second half? And I'm telling you something, they will never admit this, but they almost became afraid to win the game. And up against the force of Brady, and up against the force of a New England Patriots defense that got better and better in this game, the way it got better and better across the season, and they didn't know what the hell to do in the second half. But you know what, guys? Having said all that, this idea that you knew how this one was going to come. Well, no, not when they were down 10 with 9 minutes to go.
No,
it was,
no.
It was, listen, this idea, we've seen that.
This showed a side of New England. New England continues to be an interesting story. It's not just Superman all the time. They are vulnerable, and they a smarter team. A team that takes advantage of, how about the fumble strip that they get in the third quarter? You know, I mean, that kind of stuff doesn't happen in New England, and they take away that fumble, and what happens? They come out and they get 9 yards in three
Nothing
plays. 9 yards. Not 10, 9 yards. They're 1 yard short of a first down and driving down. Okay, so they punt the ball away, and what happens? Brady comes down, 8 plays, 85 yards, touchdown. Really experienced teams in that moment go for the jugular. When they get the turnover, they turn it into points and they pull away. The way that Jacksonville beat Pittsburgh was the only way that they were going to beat New England, which is to take such a commanding lead that New England has to play catch up all the time and the confidence stays with you. They didn't pull out enough ahead to do that. You knew that wasn't a safe enough lead with Tom Brady. And eventually, of course, they take over, you know, and they even had a chance. Even had a chance with, a little under 3 minutes to go. They got those two completions, and they got to the New England 38. And I thought, whew, you know, maybe they're growing up in front of our eyes. You're on the 38, you know, and if it had been a field goal game, that would have been a different story. And then what happens? Yeah. Incompletion, and then Bortles fumbles the ball because he gets hit. Another short pass, another incompletion, and they're done for the day.
And by the way, who emptied the playbook? The Patriots emptied the playbook. The you know, that play you're talking about before the strip with the two passes on the same play and lateral plays to Brady. The Patriots were the aggressive ones. The Patriots were, and I'm not saying that Jacksonville should have played with desperation when they were ahead, but you know what, Mitch? Sometimes you got to play with desperation when you're ahead because of who you're playing against.
That's right. Bob, you've seen it a million times.
Oh, of course we have, and this is, when you take the look at the big picture, there are certain the recurrent stuff we'd hit on a lot of them, that the teams have habitually beaten themselves while playing the Patriots as well, as they just, there's a mentality there, and the Patriots are so good at taking advantage of your mistakes, and I remember when that, first of all, that was a great play that Jack made. That was a tremendous play that he made. And that should have been such an inspiration to them. And then for them to come out and do so little with it and squander that opportunity.
Right.
We know there's a 99% chance that the Patriots guy had made a play like that, they're going to score. They're going to take advantage of it. And on it goes. And of course, Patriots, do they live blissfully? I think we can say that it was a very, very marginal, if indeed. How'd you feel about the pass interference on the big one down on the left-hand side of the field?
You know, Mike, you said it before, or Bob, maybe one penalty all day for New England. Do you really think they only committed one penalty in 60 minutes of football? Or do you think sometimes, you know, at home and being the Patriots, they get the benefit of the doubt? Now, that's okay as long as it evens out, But Jacksonville killed themselves with penalties, really badly timed penalties. I mean, not just the one you mentioned, Mike, about the you know taking too much time after a timeout.
Oh,
but that
God.
Pass interference, they had several pass interference that might as well, I mean, they didn't have turnovers, but those might as well have been turnovers, you know, 36-yard penalties and things like that. That will absolutely kill you. And you know, I heard one of their players was bitching about, you know, how can we have 98 yards of penalties and they don't have, and how could that be a pass interference? Well, and you know, the answer is, well, because you're not, they're New England Patriots and you're not. But, you know, this is not just about Jacksonville not seizing the moment. And it's amazing that, you know, we've been in this business, all three of us, for so long that we can talk this way, that we know eventually we're going to get around to Tom Brady in the discussion. But Tom Brady without Rob Gronkowski, that cannot be overstated. He loses the second best player on their team and turns that Danny Amendola into a combination of Gronkowski and Randy Moss and everybody else he's ever thrown to, and just says, okay, then this guy's going to be my guy and I'm going to win. There still is nobody at this guy's level. I don't care if he has a cut hand. I don't care if he's 40. I don't care if his trainer is dabbling in weird stuff or whatever. He is the difference maker, and as long as he's on a team, you should not pick against them all the way to the Super Bowl.
And one thing about Brady, well, first of all, you have to love Belichick, who was talking about Brady's hand after the game and said, it was an open-heart surgery, which I thought he's a, you know, even he is a quarterback, and he did have a bad hand. A couple points here. One, Brady, though, Mitch, by at this point, is used to playing without Rob Gronkowski. Okay, so as much of a loss as it was, he knows how to do it and spread the ball around. And I don't know what Blake Bortles is going to become in his career, okay? But he had the same opportunity yesterday at the end when he got the ball back with what would have felt like three lifetimes to Tom Brady in the same situation, to have the same drive against the New England Patriots that Eli Manning had the first time he beat them in the Super Bowl. The opportunity is there to have a career-defining moment. And I'm not, maybe Blake Bortles will turn out to be Eli, and maybe he'll win too, but maybe he'll look back on that moment, because Mitch and Bob famously in Arizona that night when the Giants got the ball back, Ernie Accorsi was in the stands, the guy who made the trade for Eli, and he turned to his son and he said, if he's what I thought he would be, he'll be that now. And Eli was. That it was all there for Blake Bortles and the Jaguars, and it ends with it's Stephen Gilmore making an unbelievable play on fourth down when they
They waited, you know, for patiently for Stephen Gilmore to earn his money. He got famously given.
Yeah.
No, seriously.
I know.
This was a very controversial move that un-Belichick-like-y. He gave $65 million at Gilmore, and the first half of the season, he was substandard. He wasn't very good at all. Now, of course, he's earning his money. There's no question. We got to salute. We mentioned him in passing, but Amendola has now had three consecutive games of seven receptions or more when they most matter in these games. The two plays he made, the third and 18, by the way, Brady had was 0 for career in the playoffs with anything over third and 15 until that play. That, by the way, and that was a great throw and a great catch, and then of course the winning touchdown, which is a play that obviously great wide receivers are, and which this league has in abundance. We all know that, but I marvel at their dexterity. I marvel at the combination of the hand eye and the footwork, and it was all there in that play. A tremendous play by Amendola. So let's talk about a positive act here, you know, as well as all the negative stuff that we talked about with the other guys.
Yeah, all right, I'll say that, but I'm going to say something here right now. Maybe you guys are going to disagree with me, but you know, watching this from out where I am, Bob, you live there, Mike, you're on the East Coast. I've watched this guy's whole career. I watched Tom Brady when he was in high school. I mean, in college. I'm going to say this right now. I don't care who your offensive coordinator is. I don't care who your defensive coordinator is. We're going to get the defensive coordinator to be the head coach here in Detroit, and I promise you he'll be 8-8 next year. And the reason is Tom Brady. Tom Brady, and even for defensive purposes, Tom Brady allows you to be a team that nobody else allows you to be. His ability to step up in the moment, his ability to adjust, his ability to move defenses around simply by looking. He changes the whole defensive scheme. Everyone wonders, how does he get these guys open? How do these guys end up open? It's not because they're tremendous receivers, because you see when they go to other teams, you know, suddenly they're just normal guys. They get open because he moves the guys around, literally with how he stands, how he looks, how he pump fakes, all the rest of that stuff. He is the singular difference in all of these games, and all these coaches who take off and go try to do something else are going to find when you don't have Tom Brady there, it's a whole different ball game. And he, you, I mean, I know it sounds crazy because all anybody talks about is Tom Brady, but he is the singular difference. He will be the difference in the Super Bowl. I'm not picking against them anymore. Well, I didn't pick against them in this one, but you can't overstate him. He does things that nobody else does, and I don't care what credit you want to give Belichick or the other guys who were around him. He is that unique.
Would you? I'm trying to be clear here. So you think the Lions shouldn't hire Matt Patricia?
I think they should hire him. They got to hire somebody. But I think this notion of, you know, they did it with Bob Quinn, who's their GM. Ooh, he's from New England. And New England, look how they win. And, you know, so bring the culture here to New England. Well, that didn't work out so well so far. Hasn't changed the culture here. And it's Matt Patricia's not going to change things either unless he brings Brady with him. That doesn't mean he can't win. That doesn't mean he can't be a good coach. But you're not going to be New England in some other uniform if you don't have Tom
but
Brady.
Mitch,
that's
Mitch,
my point.
You've got to I'm not arguing against Tom Brady. I think Tom Brady is maybe the GOAT in all of professional sports over the last 50 years in this country. He may very well be that, and if he wins his sixth, it elevates him even further, okay? I always thought it was more Montana than Walsh in San Francisco. However, you cannot dismiss the fact that he has been playing for the greatest football coach who ever lived. And apart from that, he's playing for one of the great owners in the history of professional sports in this country. So how much, you know, if it's a great big pie graph, you can make it 90% Brady if you want to, but it's not.
How about what percent do you think it is?
I don't know. Mitch, it's an unknowable thing. But you cannot dismiss the contributions of Belichick. And you cannot dismiss the fact that in some of the biggest moments, it has been other people who have made the plays. Like Malcolm Butler that night in Arizona when he changed the course of football history by making a play on the goal line. Yes, Brady's the greatest football player who ever lived. But you can't not say that Belichick has had, and you can't look at yesterday's game and say it was all Brady while the defense was keeping the game where it was till he could be touchdown Tom in the fourth quarter.
You know, the argument, Mike, you used the proper word back in there, which was unknowable. We, you know, it's a fun parlor game argument. We all like to have them. That's fine. The one thing that, and you can cite Belichick, is the one year he didn't have Brady, he still won 11-5, and the only reason he didn't make the playoffs was a tiebreaker.
Yep.
So that told us a lot. I think about this a lot because it comes up. You can imagine how often it comes up here in New England talking about Brady v. Belichick. I still have to lean toward the player as more important.
Yep.
But you know, there are exceptions to everything, and Belichick, perhaps he is that exception. You know, we went back. This is Boston. We've been blessed. We had Russell and Auer back, generations ago, and each of them will tell you that they needed the. You know, Red never won a thing until he got Russell, and Russell will tell you that he never would have been the player he was if he played for anybody else in the NBA. So these things are fun to discuss, but in the end, who the hell knows?
A question to you, Bob, Boston man, insider on the Patriots, and I will agree with you. It is more the player than the coach. And whether it's 90%, 60%, 70%, it's more the player than the coach. And in this case, it's more Tom Brady than anybody else in history. Mike, we're agreeing more than we're disagreeing. It's just over percentages and things like that. But let me ask you about the other player. What happens to Gronkowski now? I mean, how serious was that concussion? Is his potential Super Bowl involvement or practice involvement in jeopardy here?
Well, he's entered the protocol, which has been so roundly criticized and we know has been abused, and people say has got to be amended, and we shall see how this plays out. The world will be watching this very closely. He certainly was wobbly yesterday. Now, is 2 weeks enough to get unwobbled? I don't know. We'll see.
Is unwobbled? Is that a scientific unwobbled?
Yeah,
Is that like? I know you play a doctor on television, but is unwobbled, yep. Bob? Is that something that was part of our curriculum at Boston College?
Yep. No, unwobbled. I thought that was a universal term. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm just making a presumption here. But seriously,
it's regional.
It's going to be very closely watched because everyone's going to be very suspicious if he plays at all. And, about the whole thing. And did they abide by the thing properly? And who's making the call and all that? Oh, boy, this is going to be something. Now, isn't it seem like there's always something?
Yes.
It's never just a normal story with the Patriots. It's never just a straight line thing. There's always something. I mean, a week ago at this time, we had no idea we're going to be spending time talking about Brady's hand.
Yep.
And he didn't know himself when he got out of bed on Wednesday morning, you know. So, and now we got this thing. And by the way, let me just say this about what happened there. I don't know where when people say, you know, football can be made safer and all that. As long as people have the mentality that Barry Church had, as long as people are allowed to think that there's something, that's the way you're supposed to play the game. It's 2017. We've had endless discussions about concussions. Everyone agrees it's a horrible thing. And then the guy goes and does a thing such
yep.
as he did, which,
yep.
by the way, Gronkowski did to someone else earlier this year. I grant you, this is maybe a payback thing, a great karma thing. But how in what world should he not have been instantly thrown out of the game and automatically suspended for something in the future? How does that happen? That was a vicious, awful hit that he laid on Gronkowski that had nothing to do with tackling.
Agreed.
And, you know, when you look at that, Bob, and you look at this team, and you look at how they do overcome things, okay? And by the way, you said when Brady got out of bed on Wednesday morning, I was under the impression that he didn't actually have to do that he was just presented to the day, Bob, by a choir of angels. Isn't that what
No, Mike, and not only does he get out of bed, but I'm glad you put – but it's in his own special sleepwear. That enhances his entire.
I thought the hyperbaric chamber opened and he just
he
floated
has a
out.
Special sleepwear, which, by the way, you can purchase.
Okay,
of course.
Before we flip over to the other side, because they do have to play one more game, and it could be interesting, and it is against the number one seed from the NFC. Let me remind our good listeners that Freshly, our sponsor here, tells you that we all live busy lives, and unfortunately, there's not enough hours in the day to get everything done. We know that. Freshly is the easiest and most convenient way to eat healthy, no matter what life throws your way. Their team of chefs create all-natural, gluten-free dinners and deliver them fresh to your door, so even if you get stuck at work late, you can still come home to a delicious dinner cooked by a chef. No more worrying about what to figure out what's going to happen for dinner. No more worrying about the cleaning up, the chopping, the etc. How about dinners like steak peppercorn, penne bolognese, baked penne marinara, cod cakes, chicken and rice pilaf, bruschetta chicken, slow-cooked beef chili? This is just to name a few. This is not your Swanson's, folks. Their menu is created by chefs for people who want to eat healthy but are living busy lives and don't always have the time to do the shopping, the cleaning, or the cooking. Best part about Freshly is the number of comfort meals they currently have that are on their menu, and you can customize your weekly meals by their constantly changing rotation. There's no weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want them, and every single meal comes with a detailed and easy-to-read overview of each ingredient featured in the meal, so if you've got allergies or anything like that, you don't have to worry about it. You'll know the calorie count, et cetera, et cetera. Nothing better than knowing what happens in your daily life. You got a nice chef-cooked dinner waiting for you at home. Now, check out this week's menu created by Freshly's chef, multiple chefs, and get $25 off your first order or six chef-cooked dinners plus free shipping. Here's how you do it. You go to freshly.com/sportsreporters. Make sure you put in sports reporters. It tastes better that way. You'll feel so relieved to come home to a chef-cooked meal. Freshly.com/sportsreporters for $25 off your first order. And go and see what life is like when you no longer have to think about dinner.
Is that true that just typing in sports reporters, Bob, do you think that's true what Mitch just said, that it'll taste better if you type in sports reporters?
I don't think there's any question.
Oh, yeah. I don't lie about things like that.
Okay, fine. No, sure. No. Whatever. All right, there was another game played yesterday, and the result was probably, it might be the second most shocking result of the playoffs, the first most shocking being what Jacksonville did to Pittsburgh the week before. And the Eagles didn't just beat the Vikings yesterday. They threw them down a flight of stairs and dominated them. Once Minnesota scored that opening touchdown, this was one of the great routes that you would. It's the kind of route that I saw one time when the Giants won a championship game at home 41-0. Okay. I've got some stats for you on the Philadelphia Eagles because they're kind of amazing. They've had a quarterback play like touchdown Tom Brady the last two weekends. Here are Nick Foles' stats for the last two games. 23 for 30 and 238 yards against the Falcons. 26 for 33, 352 yards, and three touchdowns and no picks yesterday on a day which he was the best quarterback in the world. That is a combined stat line, guys, of 49 for 63 and nearly 600 passing yards in the two biggest games of his life. And you know who he turned into? And we don't even know if he would have played this well. Carson Wentz, when the Eagles needed him to do that.
Well, to me, this game turned around with 6 minutes to go in the first quarter. We got to admit, it was a different game looking at that point. I thought Minnesota was doing exactly what they needed to do. They came in, you know, they're supposed to be an indoor team. And by the way, that curse continues of indoor teams trying to win championship games outdoors. But they came in, they played good defense early on. First of all, they come out and they go right down the field. I mean, march right down the field. They score a touchdown. They force Philly to go three and out, you know, and then they come down and they're down to, you know, what was it, like the 38-yard line of the Eagles looking like they're going to go up 14-0. And then there comes that interception that gets returned. Brilliant run, by the way. Brilliant interception return. Gets run back, and it's over. I mean, it's over. Minnesota gets the ball back, they punt, and Philly comes down, scores another touchdown, the route is on. But some games are easy to sort of analyze, and it ended right there. I mean, Philly became a different team after that interception, and Minnesota looked like Cinderella who stayed, you know, an hour too late at the ball, and off came all that glow of Case Keenum, and they just became, you know, an also-ran team.
You know, it's interesting. I'm listening as Mike's, giving us those stats, and they are rather staggering, that if you step back and think, look at it, that they Wentz goes down, and now they got Foles, and we know he's a career backup. And if someone were to tell you that, okay, but on the morning of the 22nd of January, we're going to be talking about how the Eagles are able to overcome this and win with Foles, you would have thought, well, they got a great defense. They got a Jai. They got a really good tight end. I'll bet that he game managed, quote unquote, his way, and he kept them out of harm's. They kept him out of harm's way. He kept them out of. He didn't turn it over. He just did his job. They didn't ask him to win the game, quote unquote, and all that stuff. Wouldn't we have assumed that would have been the scenario by which a Wentzless Eagles team could have advanced this far? I think the answer is clear.
And
so let's give this guy Mike. You're right. He was the best quarterback on earth yesterday. Brady was for one quarter, but not the other three.
And Mr. Album, Michigan boy, Tom Brady, Michigan guy, if touchdown Tom had made the throws down the field that Foles made yesterday against the Vikings, we'd have to be reviving you with smelling salts right now.
Well, he made a lot of those throws, there's no doubt, and he was a star player for Philly, there's no doubt. But let's not discount that defense, okay? Minnesota was a pretty good scoring team during the course of the year. Case Keenum was on an incredible roll. They had Thielen. They had Stephon Diggs. They had Latavius Murray running. You didn't figure that Minnesota was going to win this game 10-7, and they scored 7 points the whole game. The whole game. All right. The whole game. And those 7 points came on their first drive. So that Philadelphia defense, which helped Philly dominate the time of possession, 34-25, Nick Foles is going to get a lot of opportunities to throw the football. And he did well with them. I mean, no, none better than, what was that, a flea flicker, you know, that he finds a 41-yard pass in the end zone. I mean, that's pretty remarkable stuff. But I'm going to say this. The fun's over. they're not playing in Philly anymore, and they're not playing Atlanta, and they're not playing Minnesota. Both good teams, not New England. I don't see Nick Foles having this kind of game in the Super Bowl against that defense. Although, you know, New England's defense is vulnerable at times, but you know, they did play two games at home, and they were underdogs in both of those games, and they had the whole crowd and the dog faces and all the rest of it. Super Bowl is going to be a bit of a different story.
Interesting the way that game started, wasn't it? Entirely mirroring the way the Patriots game started last week. Mariota took them right down the field.
Yep.
And it was a great drive, beautiful drive, as this thing was yesterday. And that was the end of it. Both cases. That was the end of it.
And by the way, I got another stat on Foles, and it talks about how strong. And again, sometimes things are hiding in plain sight. The Eagles' defense was hiding. You know, I statistically they were right up there. I get that. Okay. The way they could push people around was hiding in plain sight. And how about their offensive line in these two games that I'm talking about? Foles got sacked once in each game. He has been sacked twice for a total of 14 yards in these games. And he made plays on the run. He stepped out of the away from the rush yesterday and made great throws down the field. But he had time to throw, and it just shows you that this was the player that 4 years ago, 5 years ago, had what 27 touchdown passes and two picks. Yeah. When he stepped out of the chorus the first time. This may have been Brigadoon the last couple of weeks. All I'm saying is I'll go back to how I began this conversation. On this day, Championship Sunday, as great as Brady was in the fourth quarter, Nick Foles was the best quarterback in the world yesterday.
There's no question, Mike. I mean, but they were also up 24-7 at halftime. I mean, the game was over. When the other team kind of shrugs its shoulders and kind of lets up a little because they kind of realize we're not coming back from this, the second half, a quarterback can look awfully good, and you're just not playing against the A-plus game of the opponent anymore. Now, having said that, okay, you know, Minnesota did what they were a great team. They had a great season. Bob, you said something that I want to alter a little bit. Mm-hmm. Maybe you didn't mean it, but you said Nick Foles' career backup. He's not a career backup. Case Keenum's a career backup. Nick Foles was a Pro Bowler once, and then he's bounced around, and now he's found his way back. He ain't going to be a backup next year. You know, he's not going to. The Eagles aren't going to just put him on the bench and have Carson Wentz take over for him. So. Either they're going to keep him as a starter or he's going to end up playing someplace else. So I'm not 100% surprised that Nick Foles has this ability. There was a time where Philly thought that they were going to, cast their lot with him as their leader. But the defense, to me, is the key when they go up against New England, because they have, and if I were them, I'd watch the first, 2 to 3 quarters of the Jacksonville game, because that's kind of how you beat New England. You don't blitz. You never just forget blitzing on Tom Brady. You might as well just stab yourself in the heart, but the Eagles don't have to do that. They have good pressure. Jim Schwartz does not like to blitz very often. He likes to go after the quarterback a lot and contain him while taking away his receivers by keeping his guys back. And they have those kind of guys, Fletcher Cox and all the rest of it, to go in and beat up Brady. And, that's the only way that you can shut Brady down is by putting him under pressure and putting him under duress. And Philly does have that kind of defense. And I like that.
We thought Jacksonville, but... You're so right, and it is the formula. As Mike knows, both Giants' victories involve that, and other times they've lost in the playoffs in the Brady era is exactly the way people beat them. But people thought Jacksonville had that package too. They thought they had the person. A lot of people did thought that they had that. So right? They did. They weren't able. It was never an issue.
Well, it came within 4 points of it.
But they didn't beat him up.
No.
No.
Hey, by the way, the Giants beat up Brady, or the way the Denver once beat up Brady, or the way Seattle beat up Brady. No.
True.
So, speaking of the Giants, guys, and this is what Nick Foles is going to try to do in 2 weeks in Minneapolis. He's going to try to be the backup who won a Super Bowl the way Jeff Hostetler did one time against the Bills after Phil Sims got hurt. And by the way, there's something else that shocked me yesterday, because I started reading back on Nick Foles, and I looked over his whole career, and not just the year that he had when he had the big year for the Eagles when he came off the bench. You know, he's 6'6". He's bigger than you think. This is a big quarterback. He's bigger than Carson Wentz. And it's going to be very interesting. Bob, you alluded to this. What happens with him next year? Because it's not like you'll be over-evaluating him because of these two games. Now, you got a couple of things in his body of work. You have that 1 year in Philadelphia. You have the fact that he played this way when the lights got turned up. Whatever happens against the Patriots, he's a very interesting guy if he's on the market next year.
Yep, no question. All right.
Because you know you can make a mistake.
Is he on the market next year, or he's still got one more year in Philadelphia?
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm looking at his contract now. I think he's got one more year in Philadelphia, but that's it.
But he has some value. See, but he has trade value. I mean, I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
You don't give a guy like this away. All I'm saying is, isn't this one of the – talk about unknowable things in football, okay? How much stock do you put in what he has done the last two weekends? How much stock do you put in what he did 5 years ago? And if you're a team looking for a quarterback, but as teams, Kansas City and St. Louis were looking for quarterbacks when Foles left the Eagles, it's always a very interesting thing. Is it who are you going to believe, your eyes or the fact that he has spent so much time as a backup in his career?
I just don't see how he's sitting on a bench and Carson Wentz is starting ahead of him for the Philadelphia Eagles next year if he takes him to the Super Bowl and has any kind of game. I mean, I think he's already done enough for that not to happen. I think, ooh, you know, when you get into the offseason, when you're not playing anymore, and then agents get involved and they start talking about, you know, hey, you know, look at what my guy did, and, you know, he deserves better than this and all the rest of it. I think you're risking discontent on a team, you know, that you want to be a Super Bowl contender by having these guys. Minnesota's going to have a similar problem. Obviously, they got three free agent quarterbacks, and they got to pick one and decide which way they're going to go. And isn't Blake Bortles a free agent too? So there's a lot of, you know, for championship teams, we saw a lot of quarterbacks playing this weekend and last weekend who may not be with the teams that they got this far in the playoffs, and it's going to be interesting.
And Mitch, look at the Vikings. Okay, they got three guys. One of them's not going to be there next year. It's either going to be Teddy Bridgewater, Sam Bradford, or even Case Keenum. And the thing about Foles, by the way, he's still only 29 years old. I mean, he might just be coming into his own.
Yeah, I like him. I like him. He's steady. You know, you saw the interview after the game, you know, I mean, he could have been, you know, ridiculous. And first of all, he's obviously a religious guy. You know, he's one of those guys that thanks God first and all the rest. But he just seems steady. You know, he's like, hey, this is who we are. This is what we – then you look for that kind of stuff, you know, in it. And everybody's been – he's been the butt of jokes. He's been the, you know, come on, they're not going to win with Nick Foles. He's been the reason that they've been the underdog at home for the last 2 weeks. And he didn't take those opportunities to say, nobody respected me. You know, he just seems very steady. And I like his chances in a Super Bowl where nobody's going to give them a chance, let's face it, by the time they come in there, if they can run a game plan that is kind of similar to what Jacksonville did in the first half. You know, don't ask him to make a miracle throw downfield. Come up with some play-action designs, throw them off, you know, give him eight, 9 yard passes that he can hit to bring up his confidence. I don't see him, you know, crapping the bed just because they play in the Super Bowl.
Hey, Bob,
I don't see the Eagles winning, but I don't see that happening.
And Bob, when we talk about quarterbacks and we talk about how easy it is for history to change, or as Yogi said, when you come to a fork in the road, take it, okay? Who was standing on the stage with Tom Brady last night in Foxborough?
Oh, he was the honorary team captain yesterday.
Bob, talk about that. Drew Bledsoe and how an injury, I think it was the Jets who hurt.
It was Mo Lewis, the linebacker of the Jets, who almost killed him, literally. He was there was a life threatening circumstance for a while, and and that's the transformation. That was Brady and to Brady, right? Drew Bledsoe was there. He was the honorary team captain last night.
Yes, and he must look at all of this and say, What did Mo Lewis do to me?
Yeah, well, there's talk about level-headed guys. I can tell you a few more, you know, than Drew Bledsoe. So, yeah, I'm sure it's a piece, but I'm sure a lot of thoughts went through his head. But there's a quality guy.
I want to ask you, Bob, about, you know, while you're talking about the Patriots, and we just said, you know, Minnesota's, they could lose all three quarterbacks. I mean, they don't have to stay there, you know. All three of them are free agents. If all three of them say, you know what, the fact that you didn't pick me first, you know, I'm going someplace, so they could end up with no quarterbacks. But how about New England and their coaching staff? Now, I know Matt Patricia's already the Lions coach because I've read 14 different biographies, feature pieces on him and all the rest. Of course, here in Detroit, they haven't announced a word. You can't talk to him. The Lions can't say anything. But literally, there's nothing left about Matt Patricia, including his high school picture, that we haven't already seen in the Detroit papers. But Josh McDaniels reportedly is going to go get a job somewhere. I'm not sure. Maybe even a third coach. What does that do to, you know, the stability of the New England staff?
Naturally, this has been one of the overall strengths, is that they've had continuity in this regard, and it has gotten them to, you know, these two last two Super Bowls. We went through this 13 years ago, following the Super Bowl victory over the Eagles, when Charlie Weiss, the OC, left to go to Notre Dame, and Romeo Crennel, the DC, went to go to Cleveland. And they were so devastated by it that it took them a full 2 years to get back to the Super Bowl. And win 16 games in a row. Belichick's been here before. He's got a list, I'm sure, of people. But so that part of it, I think the Patriots will be fine. They still got the big boss. He's still the key guy. We've gone through Mangini's, and we've gone through Crennel's, and we've gone through now Patricia's on defense. We've gone through other guys, and here he is. Okay. What is interesting here is that the spotty, to be very polite, track record of the Belichick acolytes as they have gone on to other things, and really that has not been a very successful road for those guys. So McDaniels already did it once. Presumably now he learned from his mistakes, as indeed his mentor did. Belichick is not the same guy he was in Cleveland. He's similar, but he figured a few things out that he didn't know in Cleveland. You know what? These are actually people that I'm coaching. Oh my God, they're not robots. He figured that out. But there's not a good track record to people hiring Belichick assistants.
All right, I have a question before we get to our parting shots, because I've been thinking about this in terms of the length of the Patriots dynasty. Whatever happens in Minnesota, it has now gone on basically for 16 years since they beat the Rams in Brady's first Super Bowl win. Bob and Mitch, here's the only two things that lasted this long in sports. That I one was the Celtics of Auerbach and Russell, which began in the late 1950s and went all the way to the end of the 1960s. That's one. The Yankees starting in 1949 and going through 1964, and I think they were out of the World Series what, twice in those years, Bob? I may be off by that.
54 and 59. Yeah.
Right. Okay. And this, and maybe there was a Canadian streak that I'm not thinking about. But this is it's sometimes Mitch. Sometimes it's bigger than you think it is what they've done.
Well, it is bigger, especially when you bring up those other ones, because you realize in those times, free agency, salary caps, they didn't work the way that they did then. You had a great team. If you had Murderers Row in 1943, you could have Murderers Row in 1944. Doesn't happen now. Yep. You get Murderers Row in 2017, they're all free agents and signing with somebody else in 2018. So to do this, and did you say 16? If it's 16 and this is Brady's eighth Super Bowl, is he literally gone half of his years now?
Yes, yes, yes.
It's like he averages every other year he's in the Super Bowl. It's never going to happen again. I mean, not unless the game is fundamentally changed, or they open it up, you know, take off a salary cap and they let New York and Los Angeles teams build dynasties. Otherwise, if you're going to have these leveling things like draft picks, which, you know, you always get a high draft pick if you lose, salary caps, which keep the lid on, you know, and when players get great, they want more money, they go someplace else. I do not see this happening while you, me, and Bob are still on Earth Again, not even close. And the singular ingredient has been Tom Brady, followed by Bill Belichick. Okay, I'm going to give you Bill Belichick, but I'm not going to give you Bill Belichick over Tom Brady. The singular ingredient is Tom Brady. The year he went out with that knee injury, you know, early on, I forget what year it was. You know, you see the difference. Yeah, I know they did well, but they didn't do exceptional. And that's what, you know, in the end, that's what's going to get him eventually too. He thinks he's Superman, but he's not. And there'll be, you know, could be next year, could be the year after if he plays that long. Somebody's going to hit him the wrong way, and he's going to be out for a big chunk of time, and then you're going to see what the team's made of. But no, I don't think this is going to happen again in the next few decades. Do you, Bob?
No. And the Yankee dynasty, to me, Mike made the reference, that was a chunk of time, but it really extended from 1921 to 1964 when they won 27 times. It's just amazing.
But you know what I'm talking about, Bob. They won five in a row.
You're right.
They won, starting in 1949, they won five in a row, which no team has ever done. And by the way, the thing about the Patriots, here's one more fun fact about the Patriots. If they win this game, for the second time, the beginning of the run and where we are now in the run, they will have won three Super Bowls in 4 years. It's really quite. It's amazing that the one thing they have never done is the one thing that has still not been done in this sport. And that means somebody winning three Super Bowls in a row. Okay, we all know the importance of getting a good night's sleep, right? Well, guys and gals, let me tell you about Mattress Firm, which Tom Brady may very well, we don't know this, okay? He may be on a Mattress Firm. Let's keep the ball whirling, Shelley. The base for my argument is simple. Your bed budget can go further when you're shopping at America's Neighborhood Mattress Store. It's a true home run, and you'll have a ball. See what I did there? They're the head coaches when it comes to mattress expertise. But know this, they are more than mattress experts. They have a game plan that helps you transform your mattress into a bed. From adjustable bases and sheets to headboards and bedroom decor, they have you literally and figuratively covered up like your favorite cornerback. Now go to mattressfirm.com/podcast to see what deals are happening as I read the sentence to you. They even offer you a 120 night sleep trial to ensure perfection, and a 120 night low price guarantee, so you know you paid the perfect price. Talk about a 1-2 punch, a knockout, if you will. Score big with a perfect bed. Head to mattressfirm.com/podcast to get the play-by-play on how you can monumentally improve your sleep today, tonight, and tomorrow. Okay, it's time for our party shots, and since we have spent a fair amount of this talking about Nick Foles, I will go first. And forget about what the point spread is for the Super Bowl and how the Eagles are the biggest underdogs in nearly a decade, which they love, by the way. The real long shot in this game, as well as he's played in the last two weekends, is Nick Foles. You know how many times the journeyman quarterback has beaten a legend in the big game? Once. When Doug Williams played the game of his life in the Redskins, who would win Super Bowls for Joe Gibbs with three different quarterbacks, just absolutely creamed John Elway and the Broncos exactly 30 years ago. And at that point, as much of a star as Elway was, he hadn't quite achieved legendary status. Touchdown Tom Brady has. He might be the GOAT of everything we've seen in professional sports over the last 50 years. Foles isn't matched up against Brady like a couple of basketball players in the low blocks. But really, he is. It's why if he quarterbacks the Eagles past the Patriots in this game, it will be one of the biggest pro football upsets of all time.
Now, Mike, speaking of Philadelphia, you know how long it's been since the Philadelphia Eagles won their last NFL championship? That's pre-Super Bowl kiddies, okay?
I do.
Well, Ben-Hur won the Oscar for Best Picture. Joe Bellino of the Naval Academy won the Heisman.
Yeah.
The best-selling books that year were Advice and Consent and Hawaii. The Pirates won the World Series, the Celtics reigned in basketball, and the Canadians reigned in hockey, eh? No surprise there. Ohio State won the NCAA tournament, and yes, the Eagles defeated Green Bay for the title. The year was 1960, 10 presidential administrations ago. Now, the coach, who was the coach, guys? Quiz, you know? The coach was Buck Shaw. The big names were Norm Van Brocklin, Tommy McDonald, Pete Retzlaff, and of course, Chuck Bednarik, who famously went 60 minutes at center and linebacker in that game 57 years ago.
57 years. That's a lot of cheesesteaks and tasty cakes ago. 57. Now, you like that one, don't you, Mitch?
I love it.
57 years. What was your favorite? I like the Tandy cakes, the peanut butter cakes.
Cheesesteaks.
Okay.
But think I digress.
57 years. Okay. That's how long.
All right. Now I'm so hungry, I don't know that I can do mine.
Yeah, follow that. Go ahead. Follow that.
All right. Now that the Super Bowl has been set, one more tip of the hat to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Not because they came this close to beating the Patriots, but because they got there at all after a 3-13 season last year. They gave hope to teams everywhere that you can actually turn around a lousy year with the right talent picking and get into the playoffs. So looking ahead to the NFL draft in April, who's set up to be the next Jacksonville Jaguars? Well, hold your breath. It's the Cleveland Browns. Yes, the Cleveland Browns. They have the number one and number four pick. If they really use them wisely and found the kind of players the Jaguars found in Leonard Fournette, the Saints found in Marshawn Lattimore, Houston found in Deshaun Watson, they might actually make strides, which for an 0-16 year isn't hard. But you know what is hard? Finding those picks and making the correct ones. That's why the Lions never bounced from 0-16 to playoff contender. That's why perennially bad franchises rarely do. Perhaps the Browns might want to make one preemptive move before the draft to ensure they get it right. See if they can steal Tom Coughlin. That's going to wrap things up for today's show. We do this every Monday and Friday, the Sports Reporters Podcast. We're glad to have you joining us. If you enjoyed what you hear, please leave a review and tell your friends that if they want to join in, they can get it anywhere they get podcasts, Apple Podcasts, iPod, you name it. We're here every Monday and Friday, and we look forward to talking to you at the end of the week. Until then, with Bob Ryan and Mike Lupica, this is Mitch Albom saying, have a terrific week.